Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 48 of the Footmarks podcast. I'm your host, Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me is Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere, as always. And our topic for this episode is a class apart, but the class is with a K and there are two A's and one S, because this podcast is going to be about Heinrich Klassen. And we're going to be talking about his origin story and breaking down all of his numbers. And, you know, if you go and talk to a random cricket enthusiast right now and ask him or her who they think is the best contemporary power hitter in the game, odds are they might name Heinrich Klassen. And before we get into the fun stuff, Jared, I just want to ask you that what was that exact moment in time when you recognized that Heinrich Klassen is, in fact, an elite hitter of the cricket ball?
Oh, that's really interesting. That might have been the last IPL when I realized he could do it everywhere, and I suppose that was different. I remember seeing the innings he played against India all those years ago, and then kind of nothing came of it. And I remember I would be asked about him all the time, and I'd be like, well, he's not making runs, or he's not on that same level. And then to see him come back from there to where he is at the moment. So it's probably that last IPL, because we've seen really, really good players in other leagues not transfer. And it's the transferring that's the important thing, right? That ability to go across and be able to do it. And also probably Sri Lanka is the only other league where you're going to play that level of spin. And it obviously that's not even at the IPL's level. So if you are a spin basher, you and I might get a couple away against some of the blast spinners or the 100 spinners at times, but the IPL spinners is just a different level, right? So to be able to do that in 2022 or 2023, whichever his breakout year was, is probably when I started going, okay, because I'd had him on my list and then he dropped off. And so then he came back.
Fair enough. And let's move on to the origin story now. We'll take a trip down memory lane. And back in 2001, Etienne Birkenstock turned land close to the Rue de Plat Dam.
Just so you know, Rue de Plat Dam, when I did the video, I don't know what it was about that. It's a simple phrase, but I could not get it out of my mouth. But sorry, continue.
I think I kind of messed up, but if you said I did fine.
Said it. I couldn't even say the word.
He turned it into a cricketing nursery and named it the Willowick Academy. And that's where Klassen's mother visited a few months later to enroll young Heinrich. And this was an academy, by the way, which barely had any grass support staff or structure. And Birkenstock was basically single-handedly running the show over here with limited resources and negligible facilities. And he needed help in preparing pitches. So he would convince his students to pick up that trade. And whilst he would definitely need the help since he was basically a one-man show, he claimed, and which makes sense to me as well, that the development of these batters would improve if they would get to curate those surfaces. And Klassen was someone who took that opportunity with both hands. And he would spend every Wednesday curating surfaces and preparing them. And he also contributed with other chores, in the remaining days of the week. So he was very involved at the Willowick Academy. And I'd have to say, that is quite the origin story, because he was training also, apart from all of these chores, right?
Yeah. So there's a few cricketers in the world who've done this. Do you know about the MCC? Some of the players have come through the MCC.
Name one.
So Ross Taylor was one. I think Kevin O'Brien might have been, but I don't know why I picked Kevin O'Brien. There's a lot of very, very famous players who were ground staff at Lords, right? Ooh. And, Nathan Lyon is probably another player who obviously knows something about it. I've heard it helps batters a lot more because batters understand what to look for and what not to look for and everything else. And clearly it suited Heinrich's personality, right? And he decided to get all involved in it. And then I suppose the twist is that he has the friend who's a spinner. And in South Africa, if you're a spinner and you've got a friend who's a ground curator, you're probably going to be like nagging the whole time, can you give us one wicket. So he learned how to curate wickets for spinners, which meant he probably then faced his friends the spinners quite a bit on these surfaces. And suddenly he had the ability, and if you want to go back to probably the best test player of recent times, not to come from Asia, who plays spin, it's Joe Root, who happened to grow up on a wicket that spun quite a bit. Is it Sheffield Reigate? I think might be his club side. So his wicket spun quite a bit. And then, of course, he had Moeen Khan's brother as his coach.
Hmm.
It takes those sorts of things. Neil da Costa was Michael Clarke's coach, and he trained him in a much more of an Asian style of the way that he went about. It takes those sorts of things in some of these other areas for you to become good against spin, because it's not natural. Heinrich Klaassen would be used to facing big, beefy Afrikaner guys whacking the ball into the middle of the pitch, right? To have that ability in the middle of nowhere to learn this other skill and then toy with it and help your friends probably is a really, really good way of going about it. And obviously, it has played a part in his success, because I've certainly never seen a South African better at whacking spin.
Hmm.
How he would have gone against it in a test match, I don't know, but he's the best limited overs player of spin from South Africa I've ever seen.
Yeah, and I mean, it just is really, really fascinating that a young Heinrich Klaassen, he was convinced by his friends to prepare a turner instead of like a batting track. And, you know, he was developing that skill set that many South Africans don't develop ever. I think that's a very key takeaway over here, because South Africa are not really known to be great players of spin. And that's me being kind, right? We've seen them fold, you know, like a house of cards or whatever. And
yeah, they had that period, didn't they, of de Villiers, Hashim Amla and Callis, where you were like, oh, wow. But traditionally, you know, Shane Warne obviously tormented them, and you know, Cullinan and Kumble, like a lot of, and then modern times, they haven't been able to play it at all, right? So you're right, you know, traditionally it's not there. And you would think that when they have been good against spin, it's been defending it. I think a big reason they've lost so many World Cup games and you know, T20 World Cups is because in the middle overs, they get really stuck against spin. And teams just build pressure up, and then the pressure kind of explodes on them.
Yeah, and just to think that, you know, Klaassen developed all these skills in a dust bowl. Willowick was not like any private school facilities or a well-endowed club. And he is someone who was really dedicated to his trade. Like, even Birkenstock mentioned that, right? That everything he taught Klaassen, and I'm paraphrasing, Klaassen soaked in as a sponge, and he willingly volunteered to help roll those pitches and do all of those other chores. That tells you an awful lot about both his drive and character, and how he was kind of like a diamond in the rough.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think there's clearly something about him that is very, you know, that, you know, a lot of the South African cricketers come from very privileged backgrounds, whether they be white, black or Asian. Like, it's a big issue within South African cricket. And then a lot of the other guys, even if they don't come from those backgrounds, they end up at those cushy schools. They're probably not in a position where they always have to do stuff like this, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it says a lot about him, and certainly, you know, a different kind of person that he is. And he is not a person who was like pushed through the system. He had to work his way, and you know, he's got himself into a very good position from that.
Yeah. And I mean, Willowick didn't propel him into, you know, mainstream cricket in South Africa. Klaassen, you know, after graduating high school, he joined Tucks, which is the University of Pretoria's cricket team. And it's also a feeder team for the Titans second string side. And he was also studying human movement science and sports management whilst he was, you know, playing for Tucks and, of course, studying at the University of Pretoria. Now, pause for a second there. I actually have this question, that how much do you think that education alone helped Klaassen develop as a professional? Because I am of the opinion that it does matter an awful lot. And I think that must have really helped him.
Yeah, I think he's had a very different path than other South African players. And he's a very different South African player, right? Hmm. And I don't think those things are an accident. You know, clearly talent is a massive part, and his ability to hit sixes from almost any ball he faces is a natural gift, as much as he has worked at it in many different ways. But I don't think it's an accident that he is the kind of player he is, and he's so different to other South African players.
Yeah, I know how Misbah is someone who pursued his MBA in Pakistan, a country where not a lot of cricketers anymore go for education, right? That's not the pipeline over here. And he was just smarter than his peers. And I feel like Klaassen also knows a thing or two about cricket that maybe not everyone else does. He at least gives me that vibe. But anyway, he had a lot of success at Tufts. He was, of course, under the wings of, you know, Namibian coach Pierre de Bruyne. And they won a few varsity trophies and club championships together at Tufts. And that was only good enough to fetch Klaassen, you know, amateur contract with the Titans. Mm. He was sharing an apartment with Aidan Markram at that time at age 23. And 2 years later, he felt really stagnated in his career to the point where he considered walking away from it, right? That is the point where Rob Walter, who was his coach at the Titans, and he is the current South Africa white ball coach as well, he convinced Klaassen to give him one more year. And it's funny how had Klaassen refused at that point, the butterfly effect would have robbed us of one of the best modern day power hitters. And it's really crazy if you think about it that way.
This is why I am so focused. And you know how many times I mentioned this, of why talent pathways are so important, and mm-hmm. understanding that there are non-traditional forms of talent that you need to go out and find. You're always going to find the big name players from the big name cities, from the big name schools, right? That's not ever going to be the issue. The issue is finding the players that don't quite fit in. And there will be Heinrich Klaassens that we just don't know don't exist.
Yeah.
Right? And there would be many of them. And so to see a player of his talent come so close to, you know, giving it all up. And, you know, me and Estelle have written a piece about Raidu this week as well. Raidu is another player. And you're like, these are not normal level players. There's something wrong with the system if these guys are so close to giving it up. And there would be other players out there that would be like that. And it is a real shame, but that's the truth of it. And Rob Walter obviously was looking for something that he found in Heinrich Klaassen. And that was the year that it all came together. And it's late. He was, what, 24, 25? Like, this is not a young player getting it all together. This is a player who should have been in the middle of his professional career, but really hadn't quite started it.
Yeah, he was 25 at that time. And for those of you who love watching Klaassen bat, go to social media, hashtag thank you, Rob Walter. That's what you should be doing. But basically, that year that Rob Walter asked for from Klaassen, he kept wicket for Rob Walter in List A and T20 games. And he barely played any first-class cricket. I think he had, two innings in the longer format. And in T20s, he averaged 40. And in List A's, he averaged 48. And that allowed him to secure a full-time contract in 2017 at the age of 26. In what had been a life dedicated to the sport. So talk about perseverance, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that is a part of being a professional athlete, right? Like there are so many players who get picked when they're very young and get kept around because of how talented they are. But we kind of forget that there are Mike Hussey and Heinrich Klaassen out there who are desperate to make it. And we'll do everything. There's a podcast, I haven't quite recorded it yet, but I'll have to get him on. But there's a cricketer from Surrey called Tim Lindley, who I think he got his first professional contract, I think he got his first breakthrough when he was 24 or 25. And I said, were you just a late bloomer? And he said, no, I just could get trials, but no one thought I was that good. And then, you know, and sometimes those sorts of things happen.
Yeah. And I suppose Klaassen was a victim of that because, he was, 26 in 2017? His fortunes did kind of turn around quickly thereon. Fast forward to early 2018, Klaassen makes his international debut when India is touring South Africa for a full-blown tour, tests, ODIs, T20s. He plays in the ODIs and T20s. And in one of the ODIs, he kind of stakes his claim where he smashes India's venerated spin duo of Kuldeep Yadav and Yuzvendra Chahal. He wins that ODI for South Africa at the Wanderers, a game which seemed lost for South Africa. It didn't look like they would win. And he scored 36 of 21 off Kulcha, as they were known. And then in a T20 game at Centurion, he scored 69 of 30, in which he took Yuzvendra Chahal absolutely, like, he blew him to shreds. Scored 41 of 12 versus Chahal alone out of that 69 of 30. And those were two limited overs games, or the only two limited overs games that South Africa won versus India on that tour. So I suppose it would have really given Klaassen that belief and validation that he belongs at that level.
Yeah, so close to where he was, because a year before, obviously, he wasn't really, or a year and a half before, he wasn't really a full-time professional, and now suddenly he's smashing them.
Yeah.
Also, the hype around smashing India was a big thing. As I said, everyone was mentioning it to me over and over again. I remember seeing him bat and thinking, well, this doesn't, I'm not sure this is repeatable rather than just a one-off, or two-off, if you know what I mean. But,
yeah,
you know, in a short period of time. I don't think he was the full finished article at that point because he hadn't been in the professional setup for long enough. So I think what happens next is something that we see a lot. Someone shows incredible talent, everyone hypes them up, and then people start to talk about them a little bit more and they go back. It doesn't surprise me that he had a bit of a dip. I know there were injuries and coronavirus and all sorts of things happened, but it doesn't surprise me that he wasn't an instant success because I think he was probably boosted beyond where he was. He didn't have the experience or the knowledge that he needed at that point. Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket 8 is your place for cricket intelligence.
I mean, Kulcha was all the rage at that point. So out of 9 limited overs games, South Africa won 2 and Klaassen won them both those games. So I think that is those are solid credentials to start off with. But of course, he had yet to develop into the monster that he is today. And weirdly enough, due to playing for South Africa and, well, contracted COVID, all of that stuff, Klaassen did not feature in any franchise cricket in all of 2020 and 2021. And when he came back in 2022, he batted like a hitter reborn. And I mean, due to the fact that Klaassen has lost so much time getting into this position in his career where he is playing franchise cricket and is a regular for South Africa, do you think that that has played a role towards the ridiculous numbers that we've seen from him in the last 2 years?
I think there's an element of him making up for lost time. And I don't think he was ever going to be an anchor. But I do think he's playing with the kind of freedom of someone who's playing with, essentially, he's lucky to be here. And if he's going to do it, he's going to do it his way, if that makes sense. So there's two ways of going about it if you're an older player like that. You either cling to your professional career and sort of sink your teeth in and you have to be dragged off it. Or you go, do you know what? This almost didn't happen the first time. The second time, it didn't go particularly well for me either. Now I'm just going to go for it. And it feels like to me that is what has happened. And so, yeah, I do think he's making up for lost time. I mean, with the level of talent that he has, we might only see 3 or 4 years of peak Klaassen, right? And we didn't see much before. And we might not see much after, right? You know, he's, how old is he now? 33, 34?
32, I think.
Is it 32? So let's say we get another 2 years of him at his absolute best, and then it might start to trail off really, really quickly around 34, 35. We don't know at this stage how long he'll be able to last. And so I'd be shocked if he's not thinking that. And so the best way for him to think about that is, great, well, I'm feeling great at the moment. I'm seeing this. I'm going to hit this ball for 6. There's a freedom in that. And also, you know, you talk to a lot of players who were on the verge of giving it up, or sometimes they even do retire, and that's when they go in because the pressure is off then.
Yeah, right. And he has batted like someone who, you know, is liberated, and he bats with freedom. And it's like he knows that every game could be his last. That's the feeling I get when I watch Klaassen bat. And I mean, it is a wonderful story in terms of how he is probably one of the top 3 most talked about South African cricketers in the world right now after all of that toil. And and kudos to him for persevering. But anyway, it's time to get to his numbers. And first up, let's compare Klaassen to the platinum standard of South African power hitters of yesteryear. And, you know, from the Rainbow Nation, the first name that pops up to your mind is AB de Villiers. And 9 South Africans have scored over 1,000 runs versus spin in domestic T20 cricket across the globe. And AB de Villiers is sat at number 2 in that list. He averaged nearly 42 with a strike rate of 137. Versus spin with a boundary percentage of 52 and a dot ball percentage of 27.8. Klaassen, in comparison, is head and shoulders above AB. It's not even a competition. Klaassen, of course, is at first place. He averages 49 at a strike rate of 183. And his boundary percentage is 67, which is flat out ridiculous. And his dot ball percentage is 23.6. So just saying that out loud, Jared, comparing him to AB and basically seeing how AB is, you know, pale in comparison to Klaassen, it just feels a bit surreal saying that out loud.
Yeah, and AB is a very traditional player against spin. He would occasionally do that sort of Joss Butler low flat bat shot that we would see, but AB played spin correctly, you know, outside of the reverse sweeps. And you know, these days that is also correct.
Yeah.
Heinrich Larsen's very, very different in that a lot of what he does is as T20 bowlers have bowled more conventionally. Not more short. So they used to pitch it up because that's what you do in test cricket. Now, if you have a look, you know, Sunil Narine, Rashid Khan, they bowl quite short, right? Syed Ajmal used to do it as well. And we're seeing more and more spinners bowl shorter. And he's invented this new shot that's almost like a flat six.
The straight magnet. Pull. The straight pull, right? Exactly. Love that about him.
And it gives him a boundary option where you can't bowl a length to him. Because if you bowl that new traditional, that new T20 bowling length, he's just going to sit there and play that shot. And if you pitch up, he'll just get on top of it and play a conventional shot. And so there's no length to bowl to him, right? Yeah. And it makes him so tough to go to, whereas I'm not sure what the best ball to him as a spinner really is at the moment. He really is absolutely fantastic. And the other thing is, hitting sixes, the reason, I mean, there's many reasons that spinners have a lower economy than seam bowlers. Part of it is where they bowl in the game. Another one is that hitting a six off a spinner is a decision, right? Whereas you might be facing a quick bowler and they go short and you just go with a hook shot, right? You can hit boundaries off seamers from reacting.
Yeah.
But off spin, you usually have to make it, unless it's a bad ball, you usually have to make a real decision. Oh, I'm going to try and hit this for six. He just is looking for the six so regularly against spin in a way I don't think I've ever seen another player ever, go for that. That he never has to make that decision because every single ball is going to be whacked down the ground or whacked over mid wicket for six. And then he has the power to back all that up and the ability against spin, right? And it's all those different things put together, I think, make him so unique and remarkable.
I also find it remarkable how he so consistently whacks it down the ground. We just mentioned the straight pull that he has. Now, I've seen some players hit that, but whenever they do it, it seems fluky. When Klaassen hits that straight pull, it seems like he knows exactly what he's doing. And if you look at that wagon wheel, you know, a lot of it is down the ground.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's an automatic shot. It looks completely repeatable. He can play it when the ball's close to his body. He can play it when the ball's wide of off stump. There's no, the width doesn't matter as much to him, and he can shuffle around in his crease. Most players playing that shot would probably get bowled quite regularly. I don't know if it's just that if you do bowl faster, his hand speed just catches up for him or whatever it is. But it would be a risky and is a risky shot for most people. And to him, just doesn't look that way. In a way, do you remember when Steve Waugh started playing the slog sweep? So the slog sweep wasn't really a massive shot in cricket, you know, and then Steve Waugh started playing the slog sweep. And almost automatically, you felt like he was never going to miss the slog sweep. In fact, if he tried to sweep normally, I would feel more uncomfortable than if he was playing the slog sweep. And that's what it kind of looks like with Heinrich Klaassen, where you just, or, you know, Dean Jones running down the wicket is another perfect example. Or Javed Miandad playing inside out over cover. These are all things that didn't really exist beforehand. But when those players mastered them, you just looked and went, oh, well, he could do this at any time he wants. Mm-hmm. And that's what Heinrich Klaassen looks like.
Do you think that those curated spin wickets that he created himself in his youth maybe even helped him as a keeper?
I mean, probably. And also, being a keeper might help him as a batter against spin. Mm-hmm. Most people who keep are just not very good at, are just not very good at batting. Like, and I mean, I don't mean, you know, just in general, there's obviously differences there. But perhaps him standing behind the mark has gone with that. The interesting thing is most keepers sweep spin because they pick up the length really easily, right? Because they're so used to taking the ball. Is it possible that he's better at picking up length, but instead of playing the sweep like everyone else, he's just like, I've got a shot that is better than the sweep. And to be honest, for him, it is. I still think if I played that shot three times in a row, I'd be bowled 2 out of 3. But it doesn't seem to work that way for him. So it really is a it's a fascinating shot. And I think this is where cricket isn't written about well enough. He should be on podcasts and in articles and newspapers should be written about him, of whether this shot is repeatable for other people, how he learnt it, where it came from. Yeah, should have a great name. All these things should happen. And we're not quite there yet, but it'd be fascinating to try and get him on a broadcast or, you know, get a really good journalist in with him to just ask him, just take us through. Because if this is a shot other people can play, that should mean for the first time ever that we'll have people who can score at the same or even quicker against spin than they do against pace. And that's never been the case in T20.
How about the back foot slap for a
I remember Ian O'Brien always used to call the straight pull the strapple. But I'm not, I think the strapple makes it sound like it's a harder shot than it is. So it needs to be something. It's almost, it's the kaboom. I don't even know. It's there's something going on with that shot.
Yeah. And I mean, to your point, if more people look into that and see whether or not it's repeatable for other batters, Klaassen could very well be a disruptor of the sport over here, right in front of our eyes, right?
Well, I suppose that's what I'm hinting at. I wonder if this is an evolution of how we can hit spin.
Yeah, interesting. And I hope that someone looks into that more deeply. But anyway, if we compare, let's go back to Klaassen's numbers, of course. We were comparing it to AB. And if we compare AB's IPL numbers versus spin to Klaassen's, again, there is no real comparison. Now, De Villiers averaged 36 in more than 100 outings at a strike rate of 131 and faced almost 19 deliveries for every six that he struck. Klaassen, on the other hand, has batted in just 23 or 24 IPL games. And since the start of 2023, he hits a six once every six deliveries. After tonight's knock, and we're recording this in the direct aftermath of Sunrisers versus, RCB, those numbers might have changed. Maybe it's less than six now because it definitely seemed like that. And he has an average in the IPL versus spin of 115 at a strike rate of 200. And the dot ball percentage drops to 20, right? That is insane. Forget AB. He stands out as an absolute anomaly in this period alone amongst all IPL batters. On the graph, he is this one dot hanging out on his own. And no one is coming close to recreating these standards. And that is one hell of a feat.
Yeah, I think that's why I think he can change the game. It's because what he's already doing, I've never seen happen before. So Suresh Raina or Ambati Raidu or Mahela J. Wardner, like these great white ball players of spin, Aravinda De Silva. What they do is just really good player. Really good play against spin, but in limited overs cricket, right? We have seen Chris Lynn and Andre Russell and Sunil Narine and, you know, these sorts of revolutionary hitters against pace who are very, very different. Almost, you know, Liam Livingston, you know, another one. They're almost baseball hitters at times, right?
Yeah.
We haven't really seen that for spin. The best players against spin are generally the people who play spin really good in red ball cricket, and then they up their ability. And it's very rare to get a player who has a higher strike rate against spin than against pace. And when you do get it, it's probably someone more like Chris Gayle, who would do that by scoring at almost three runs a ball against left arm finger spin, right? So it's someone who crushes one kind of spin or a couple of kinds of spin. The thing with Henrik Klaassen is the ability to do it so routinely across everyone. But again, he's not marginally better against spin than pace. He's massively better against spin than pace. And that is really, really rare. In fact, the only player I can think of that ever had this much of a boost was Cameron Akmal. He had a much higher strike rate against spin than pace, but it's nowhere near Henrik Klaassen's level. And again, you could throw him into that Aravinda De Silva, Mahela J. Wardner, and Ambati Raidu type of player. Right, of fantastic player of spin who could score a little bit quicker against it. Whereas Henrik Klaassen is just sitting there and kabooming, strappling, whatever the one that you said was, the ball back down the ground. Backfoot slapping down the ground. It's a very, very different, right?
Yeah.
It's not normal playing of spin. It's a potential new shot.
And I mean, just to kind of double down on what you said, if we look at Klaassen's numbers versus spin in all domestic T20s since the start of 2022, That average goes up to around 61. And the strike rate it's at a whopping 196. Like, it is unreal to just say this out loud again. And I mean, you think that, oh, he's a spin basher. That means that that's his USP. Well, no. If you focus on his numbers versus pace, in that same time frame, since the start of 2022, he has struck, countless sixes and fours. Before this innings, I think it was at 61 sixes and 81 fours versus pace. And his average is 43 and his strike rate is 174 in all of domestic T20s across the globe. Now, Jared, those numbers are such that someone could have them versus pace and they could call themselves a pace basher. You know, they scream elite. And it makes this even more bizarre and Klaassen even more bizarre as a cricketer because, you know, you look at the pace numbers and you're like, oh, so he is amazing and unprecedentedly good at spin, but those numbers versus pace have nothing wrong with them. They scream elite as well.
If you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a 2-year contract with a discount, plus 4 extra months, plus gifts in some markets. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a blocker protects the stumps with NordVPN today. So there's a lot of players, especially from Western countries, who have numbers like that against pace. And then against spin, they strike at about 120, 125. So they end up with a strike rate of about 140, 150. And we talk about how great they are.
Yeah.
That's how good his numbers against pace are. And yet, he's doing this against spin. And the other thing about the pace is, he's doing that against pace at the death. Yes. When you are supposed to be scoring at 160 or 165, right? He's doing it against spin in the middle. So there's no way of manipulating or whatever. It is remarkable. He's not weak against pace. I don't think he's as consistent a scorer, a six hitter against pace. I think he's six hitting, and I'm not saying he's not a six hitter against pace, as you said, compared to normal people. But if you compare the two, I really think anytime he's facing spin, I expect him to hit a six. Whereas against pace, I think sometimes he looks for fours a little bit more. Mm. Whereas against spin, I don't even, if he hits a four, it's just because he hasn't elevated it the way he wanted to, right? It really does feel that. Whereas against pace, watch him sometimes, he'll go to backward point or he'll go through mid off. He has like a flat bat sort of, again, very Joss Butler type shot that he goes through between cover and mid off that he will hit along the ground or he'll try and just get it over the top. Whereas against spin, it is literally which boundary should I clear?
Yeah. And if you just talk about Klaassen versus pace, one of the testament to his prowess versus that type of bowling is the fact that he is, one of one or two batters this entire IPL season who's been able to smash Jasprit Bumrah. So, those are solid credentials as well. And if you look at Klaassen's IPL numbers since the start of 2023, he has the most runs, the best average, and the highest strike rate amongst the top 10 batters at positions 4, 5, and 6. He is the most complete middle-order batter, and his true statistics depict that as well, as he averages 32 more runs than expected at a plus 24 strike rate over the average player who bats in those same phases. Now, people who don't know how true stats work might not realize how massive that is, the gravity of these numbers. So maybe give them some quick context around that, because we're usually looking at like true strike rates of 5, 10, that sort of stuff. And this guy is operating at 24.
Yeah. If your true strike rate is plus, 5, that means you're scoring at a comfortable rate ahead of everyone else all the way through.
Above the mean.
Yeah, we would say that is a player that we don't have to worry about their intent or their scoring ability, if that's the case. If you're 10, if you're 15, if you're 20, it's a really big difference. And the best way of looking at it is that for every ball he faces, he is 0.25 runs more than anyone else is. That's the best way of looking at it. That is if he faces 20 balls, right? And you're now starting to get, the gravity of that, that's potentially an extra 50 runs in some innings more than what another player would be able to score because of his ability to score so much quicker on every single ball. The other thing that's remarkable about him is that He's doing that against spin, and he's doing that at the death. The death is when everyone's scoring quite quick, right?
And so, he's still way ahead of
them. Yeah. So I always thought Andre Russell's best years, and I haven't gone back to, I've done it, but I can't remember off the top of my head, but I always thought his best years was when he was hitting spin as well, because you could bat him in the middle, and if he had a strike rate of 170 and he was batting in the middle overs, that actually meant that everyone else might be having a strike rate of 120. So he was like at plus 50, right? And Heinrich Klassen is managed to do this, but batting pretty much later on. Even when he comes in at number four, it's usually when there's a wicket around the ninth or tenth over. He's not coming in at like a traditional number four, because they don't want him to come in like a traditional number four. They want him to be facing 30 balls at the end of in the last 10 overs. They want him to face the end of the spinners or the middle of the spinners. And then by the time the quicks have come on, he's already completely changed the projection of the game, right? Like the game is over. Not over, but the game has changed just because of his innings. And that's what he can do.
I remember way back in the day, well, not way back in the day, a year ago, when we did the Footmarks episode on IPL MVP seasons, a fair few of those MVPs had two strike rates of 10 and 15. This guy's at 24, right? And even if you look at his regular strike rate versus balls faced, the only time he strikes at less than 150 is on his fourth ball. And the strike rate just skyrockets as his innings progresses. Like, it never like calms down. It is just going up, up, up. And if you look at his true strike rate, even at his worst, his true strike rate is 10 points in the positive. So that is an MVP season for everybody else. And that's his worst ball in the entire innings. Plus, you add the fact that he's also a fantastic rotator of strike, which is not true for a lot of power hitters, right?
No. That is the interesting thing of, I would love to know how he's managed to combine those two, because we have seen that from AB de Villiers. AB de Villiers and probably Glenn Maxwell and Jos Buttler are the three guys that I've ever found that for a significant period of their career had a dot ball percentage under 30, and a strike rate over 150. And Jos Buttler, with Glenn Maxwell, obviously went up and down. He was a lot more inconsistent. Jos Buttler was a lot more consistent. And AB de Villiers is probably the greatest we've seen in white ball player since Viv Richards, right? So that is remarkable to be able to do that. And yet, we talked about AB de Villiers before. His dot ball percentage is like 7 percentage points lower than AB de Villiers. To have a dot ball percentage of around 20, and I think that shows you he's not a slogger against spin who's doing well, which there would be nothing wrong with that if that was the case. This is a batter with a new method against spin who is a genius. And I think you can start to see that when you dismantle it.
He can smash spin like no one else probably ever has. He's maybe even disrupting the game like we've mentioned earlier. He smashes pace better than some so-called pace smashers. And, then he's a fantastic rotator strike. Like, he's only behind the likes of great anchors in the IPL, like Kohli and Gill and those guys. He's just right behind those guys. And other big power hitters like Sky and Maxwell, they're not great at rotating strike. So that really puts Klassen in a league of his own, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think Maxwell is, actually. I don't know if he is anymore, but he certainly has been traditionally. But yeah, the West Indian guys, they don't rotate strike.
Dre Russ can't do it much.
And so what it means is that And he's not just good at rotating strike, he's good at getting twos as well. Mm. If you watch that innings today, the amount of times he got twos when he couldn't hit a six was really, really important. And so you're then in a position where he's kind of the complete package. And I think it's because he's so comfortable against spin that he has the option of playing, he's not missing balls. I know that sounds weird, but he's not missing balls because he doesn't play and miss in a way that Phil Salt does. Phil Salt's a really attacking player. Liam Livingston misses the ball a lot. Heinrich Klassen does not miss the ball a lot against spin. And again, I know that sounds weird, but if you go back, players do. They're trying to back cut. Heinrich just doesn't. And the ball's almost always hitting his bat. And of course, the fielder set back as far as possible. So there's easy singles on option offer for him all the time, and there's twos. And so it really is, it's that ability. And that is why I was talking about Maxwell, de Villiers, Buttler, and Klassen, because they are batters who bat in a different method, or AB is probably the more traditional one, but the other three guys, yeah, they've got their own method. But they have this incredible ability to, they can still, they're all four of those guys could make a test 100 for you, right? So, you know, Butler and Maxwell has, AB de Villiers was obviously a great batter. Heinrich Klaassen never managed to get to that level. And we've talked about, you know, his late start and everything else. And he retired after a couple of test matches and everything else.
Yeah.
But I have absolutely no doubt that Heinrich Klaassen could easily make a test 100 as well, and be that level of batter. So there is a different kind, again, comparing that to someone like Chris Lynn or Liam Livingston, they're very different kinds of players.
Yeah, and I mean, he did have ambitions to play test cricket, but I think now, given his age and his utility, it just makes sense for him to play limited overs and franchise cricket.
He's
and,
got a limited time for his limited overs.
And I mean, he is a shoo-in in both the ODI side and the T20I side, and he's probably going to want to play the next four-year cycle, right? World Cup ODI in South Africa. He's going to want to play that, I reckon. But anyway, there is one caveat in Klaassen's stats, and that is his chasing record. Now, we have seen his best when Klaassen is batting first. And when his team bats second, his numbers do drop significantly. Now, that's not to say that he can't chase. We all saw that innings versus KKR and how he nearly won that game, which was pretty much lost for Sunrisers. They needed, 60 of the last three overs, and they lost by, barely any runs. And that's because Klaassen got out at the end. So it's not that he can't do a job, but, you know, the numbers are better when he is, or his team is batting first, which is weirdly a very, very South African thing at this point. But, do you feel that the pressure, the parameters that are set in a run chase, they impact Klaassen's batting, because then he can't just bat as freely and it's not all like random?
I think, to go back to something we were talking about at the start, I think there is a definite freedom in his batting. And I think in the first innings, that freedom makes a lot of sense. And I think in the second innings, you don't play, that freedom doesn't make any sense anymore, right? I'm still a bit shocked, because I think his average is like double or something ridiculous in the last 3 years. And even his strike rate drops down a little bit. I kind of would expect one or the other. The fact that it's both, I find a little bit more confusing. But yeah, I think if you're coaching him, that's probably the last, hurdle, is because there's no point having a weapon like that if it can't chase for you as well. Like he'll win you a lot of games, but even if he split his record, it would be more important for you to have him on both sides. Because when you're chasing, if teams start to work out, he's not the same level of player when he's chasing, they don't have to worry about him. And what you really want is a player who affects your plans when you're chasing. So they're like, oh, we can't bowl him now. We can't do this now because Heinrich's coming in. Well, if that's not the case and he's only averaging 25 and striking 140 when he's chasing, you think to yourself, well, we'll just play normally and we hope this isn't one of the days he comes off.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's probably for him personally, and also for, the coaches, with personal coaches or, many different franchise or national coaches he has, to unlock that. I think he can get better at it. I think he's always going to be a better first innings player based on what I have seen of him in his career so far. I think it makes sense the way he plays, that he will be better in the first innings and the second innings. All you really want to be able to do is match that up. And I should say that before his magical period, he was, the numbers were a lot closer. So a lot of this has come in that last 2 year period. It's not always been the case when you go back and look at his older record.
We need to convince Elon Musk to come up with some tech which allows us to fuse Klaassen with Kohli, and then you'll get the perfect white ball batter, right? Because the chasing element will come from Kohli.
I mean, the thing is that there are sometimes just technical reasons as well, and sometimes it is mental reasons. You know, we talked about Steve Smith loving to bat in the first innings of a test match and not loving to bat in the fourth innings. Steve Smith doesn't like context. Steve Smith likes batting. I want to bat the way I want to bat for as long as possible. And Klaassen wants to go out there with the freedom to be able to score 80 off 30 balls.
Yeah.
And when you're playing in a chase, that's a very different situation. You are playing to a set score. And, you know, we don't notice it as much in bowlers, but it does seem to be a big psychological... The two big psychological things that if you could work these out, you would make a lot of money in cricket is the batting position and how to get people to forget batting positions completely. And the other one would be first innings to second innings, because those are the ones that cause the most issues. Everything else is probably largely technical.
I mean, if a side is a good bowling side, I'd expect their batters, the same side's batters, to have lower strike rates in the second innings because they'll just want to chase more comfortably, unless you're England, because England will still throw the kitchen sink at it. But I don't think that's the case with South Africa or Klaassen's teams, because they're, you know, not particularly great chasing sides or even great. Like, yes, sure, South Africa has a fantastic bowling lineup. But yeah, I mean, it is an interesting predicament. I think we probably need to look at it more. But hopefully Klaassen can crack that code as well and just become the ultimate T20 middle order or middle overs batter. Anyway, to wrap this up, I want to ask you, pound for pound, looking at both his spin bashing and pace whacking and consistent run scoring all the while, do you think there is a better power hitter in the modern game than Henrik Klaassen?
No, because he can do it against pace and spin, and I'm not sure what you do to slow him down other than getting batting in the second innings. Mm. I mean, Andre Russell's still there and thereabouts, and Nicholas Puran's last year and a half, 2 years, is back up there, and David Miller is absolutely fantastic once he gets going.
Yeah.
Hardik is not there at the moment, but Hardik is obviously fantastic. Then you've got guys like Tim David, who can kind of do it right at the end, Romario Shepherd.
Yep.
But if you're looking for someone to kind of power, you know, I think Henrik Klaassen is your best bet out of all of those players. You might pick Andre Russell just because of the bowling rather than the keeping. But I think Henrik Klaassen is your best bet because I don't know how you stop him. Whereas with Tim David, you know, Tim David's coming in, you're just like, we'll keep an extra over of leg spin, right?
Yeah.
You know, Hardik Pandya is coming in and you're like, well, he might be batting like an anchor today, right? We don't know where he's going to go. And, you know, I think Sky is very special. I think Puran is very special, but I don't know if they are hitters in the same way.
Hmm.
And Hetmeyer, you could throw in with them as well. So from a hitting point of view and a power point of view, I think Klaassen is the most if you'd ask me right now, who's the most likely to score 80 off 30 in the world? There is no one even remotely close to Klaassen. If you said we need to do it three times out of the next 10 games, I'd be like, he's a chance of doing that. Whereas I don't think that's the case of Andre Russell. I don't think that's the case of Glenn Maxwell, even if maybe they could score even quicker because we know on their days they take it to another level. The consistency of power hitting, I think, is the amazing thing with Henrik Klaassen.
And I mean, that was the amazing thing with Sky as well when he had that year, but he's not that good a rotator of strikes. So Klaassen has something over him over there. And
Sky can bat earlier in the order. So you get that. But I don't think Sky is a power hitter, right? I think Sky is something different again. So, you know, if you're looking for that power hitter, I think Henrik Klaassen is your best option.
Yeah, fair enough. And I suppose just to, you know, end this, I had a fantastic point, which I've completely forgotten.
I was going to say, yeah, I can tell you had a fantastic point, the way you're looking at the ceiling.
Yeah, and it was to do with Klaassen. And
yep, that I'm going is to keep who we're talking this. About on this yep, episode, yep. Henrik Klaassen.
Yeah, I suppose I've forgotten it. We've lost it to...
I've been in recordings since the start of the day to the end of the day. So I think this is the perfect way to finish it, this particular podcast.
Yeah, I suppose so. And you guys let us know in the comment section below whether or not you think that Henrik Klaassen is the best power hitter in the modern game. If you enjoyed this video, give us a like and share this video with your friends and subscribe to both this channel and Jared's other channel on YouTube. And yeah, we'll be back with another episode of Footmarks next week. That's all for today. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.